So that's where I think they get stuck is, you know, you bring on this $60,000, you know, we're going to pound on all the doors and cold call salesperson. And like, you know, the first thing I say to them is, when's the last time you took a cold call? They're like, never. And I'm like, so you're going to spend $60,000 and commission someone to really do this with no process and no marketing. You call me in 3 months when you're annoyed.
Welcome to the How Leaders Think podcast, the show that transforms you by renewing your mind and giving you new ways to think. I'm your host, Kenny Lang, and with me today is the Kyle Mealy. He is the founder and CEO of Next Level Coaching. I love coaches. Yay. Kyle is a fractional chief revenue officer. That means money, for those of you who don't know. He helps businesses with their client services and recurring revenue structured businesses. So it could be SaaS, it could be service-based. He probably could help me, so maybe I'm about to get some free coaching and therapy. But he helps those organizations that are between 1 million and 10 million find profitability and growth. His company, Next Level Coaching, has a 100% success rate. That's 100 with a 2 zeros. In doubling top line revenue in 3 years or less. That is incredible, including an average first year growth rate of 30.4%. And they achieve 10x profitability. If Kyle hasn't written a book, let's hope he does soon. He has sat in the COO, CEO, CRO, and probably some more O's seats with businesses from startup to 26 million in revenue. Welcome to the show, Kyle.
Wow, I sound way more impressive than I feel. And yeah, there is a book coming.
Oh my gosh, awesome. You heard it here first, folks. Also, you might want to give your executive assistant a bonus for this really flattering bio.
No. Because I can write it.
Well, tell me, Kyle, what is on your mind?
Well, truly, it's funny. I didn't tell you about the book. The book is, deadline is June 1st, so it'll be coming out this summer. Oh, yeah, it's really happening. And so I literally have been, you know, really chewing on how to help, you know, the small business owner community stop thinking about marketing and sales as two distinct, you know, departments and start thinking of it as a revenue department where marketing and sales equals revenue. That's what's like, that is all consuming all the time. What's on my mind.
I love it. And I'll probably poke and prod at this because, you know, you and I've talked outside of officially being recorded, about the work that I do. And that's one of the first things I do with companies is, and nonprofits is, you know, let's talk about your org chart. And with my for-profit clients, that question comes up. Do we have a marketing leader and a sales leader sitting at a senior leadership team, or is it a singular department? And it's a 50-50. It's a total coin toss as to what my clients are going to choose. Now, it sounds like you have some really well-informed thoughts based on that glowing bio, all the things and the numbers with stuff. But tell me, what have you seen be sort of like the prevailing wisdom about those being separate departments? Because it sounds like you're not advocating for that in most cases. I don't know if there's a never say always and never. What's the prevailing wisdom around those departments and their contribution to an organization?
Yeah, I'll kind of start big picture, come down to the small picture. You know, when I was thinking about this chief revenue officer concept, you know, it had always been really attributed to sales and kind of enterprise and upsell, which I felt like was, you know, not relevant to the small business community, right? None of us don't have that, you know, extreme of revenue streams where we need that kind of, you know, amplification. And if you have a chief revenue officer who's kind of looking at the sales side and kind of internal operations, it kind of requires a marketing person over here. But since most small businesses, we're wearing so many hats, we don't really have the luxury of being able to afford an executive marketing leader and an executive sales leader. Now, do I believe that it's always chief revenue officer or, you know, revenue and department always. No, I do think there's breakpoints and there's a maturity of a business where it makes sense to split those because they, you know, do it higher end businesses, you know, in the 50 mil, 25 mil, it starts to need two different leaders. But, you know, the proposition I'm having is below that, like you can't afford both at the level you need to get where you want to go.
So, because some are starting, in my experience, some are starting with the unified department, not out of a strategic choice, but out of the set, like we, there's like three of us, or, you know, that's maybe a little bit of hyperbole, but the, it's from a necessity, not out of, as Will Ferrell, at, you know, posing as George W. Bush, strategery.
Strategery.
Lockbox. Sorry, had to complete the sketch. Yep. But it. How are you approaching it from a strategic thought? Because I think some people are just going about it because, like, well, what else are we going to do? I don't have. I'm the chief everything officer. I'm marketer, salesperson, customer service, and chief trash collector.
That's where I think I like have the most fun in what I do. And it's where I think the theory, you know, I've done it and now I'm continuing to prove that theory is there is this moment when the C everything officer is trying not to be that. And so, you know, one of the things that most C everything officers, specifically in small B2B business, which is where, you know, this model I think applies most, they have to pass something off. And I think one of the first things they consider passing off is sales to another salesperson. They try and have their first sales hire, mm-hmm. or they have their assistant, or they bring on, and I'm being playful here, but usually it's a niece or a nephew who takes over marketing, or some relative.
They're that, real good on the Facebook.
Yes. And then they kind of get stuck because they never clear enough revenue to afford a full team or a full leader. And they've kind of taken on this overhead, and I mean, we know enough about C everything officers that they don't really build process or systems or scale, like really know how to reproduce themselves. And so that's where I think they get stuck is, you know, you bring on this $60,000, you know, we're going to pound on all the doors and cold call salesperson. And like, you know, the first thing I say to them is, when's the last time you took a cold call? They're like, never. And I'm like, so you're going to spend $60,000 and commission someone to really do this with no process and no marketing. You call me in 3 months when you're annoyed. Like, that's just how that goes. So I think that's like the entry point to where I started to realize, like, there is a necessity here already. But if we actually just think of it from that place, I think we build differently. And we don't just grab what seems like the right next step. We actually take steps.
Interesting. Yeah. So it's really by almost by design or by intention that we're stepping, not just, well, this is what's in front of me, so I guess I'll do it. Yep. And I do think that there's probably a time and a place to just like just deal with what's in front of you. But at some point you've got to turn the corner and say, I have agency over this and I get to choose this. And if I were to choose it, how might I approach it if it wasn't, you know, didn't feel like a choice being made for me or something happening to me is something I'm helping to make happen. Right. That's so the like a, right lot, a lot of your coaching is pivoting their mindset towards, you know, the business isn't happening to you. You can make things happen in your business.
Yeah. That's why I've kept coaching in the brand name. You know, I'm a marketer at heart. And so I keep having this moment where I'm like, do I get rid of it? And it's like, no, I feel like I spend a lot of time helping the chief everything officer or CEO, lovely CEOs, think differently about marketing and sales. And I find just as much time on the leadership teams that me and my team are a part of that we're helping, you know, the chief operating officer, the number two, like think differently about marketing and sales. Because most of the time they're frustrated with sales because salespeople don't generally think in reality or in process, which annoys that role pretty heavily. And marketing feels like a guess. It not annoys that role. And so I kind of spend half of my time, you know, helping people think about what if we put this all into one bucket and thought of it as one system, one process. Now there's no finger pointing.
Yeah, because now we're wearing the same jersey. We're on the same team. But
not protect your girls.
Yeah. You can't get into the silo, the departmental territorialism that, where the heck that comes from. Hopefully at this point, people realize that's, not just ineffective, it's also stupid.
But what we were first talking about is, where did this come from? Well, that's kind of how most of us saw businesses being run. Marketing is marketing. We do branding, and then sales guys do sales things. They go out there and they do the icky thing we don't want to talk about. And like, what's funny is brand marketing at small business doesn't work anymore, and pounding on the doors doesn't work anymore, but we're still kind of thinking our business this way. So that's like literally what sent me into the blue ocean of this space.
So I hate when people say, I'm going to play devil's advocate. I'm like, look, he's got enough. He doesn't need any more. But I could see someone, and I'm saying this because, I've been guilty of thinking this. I've also had clients say this back to me during this sort of exercise of like, okay, well, we're going to make it one, and then we're going to have a sales leader report to like a CRO type position or a revenue director type position. And we're going to have a sales leader and a marketing leader report. Well, did you really change anything, or did you just give them both a boss, right? Like, you could make an argument, and I've had it made at me. I'd like to say to me, but it was more at me, that, well, it's not really any different. You still got sales, you still got marketing, nothing changed. You just changed how high that went up in the org chart. We're still going to be territorial about our teams now instead of our departments. How do you come at that to make sure it really is a true, we're joining forces, we're on the same side, if we're protecting anything, we're protecting each other?
I have two interesting things that I think about in that question. So I'm really grateful for the question. Thought number one is, if you really do have the budget for a strong sales manager and a strong marketing manager and an individual contributor line for marketing and sales, you're starting to knock on the door where this model makes less sense. I have yet to find that happen really sub 10 million where it makes sense to do it. And you're confusing a sales leader with a sales executive, right? There's a big difference between a sales manager and a sales executive. But just, right. I want to name that. And there is more than one way to crack this egg, but I will say rarely is that really an issue. You're really talking about a manager. And what I would say to the other part, the other thought I have is, we do one, in one of the things I bring, to my clients is a simple singular attribution model. No longer are we measuring events, one-off. We're not measuring paid advertising in the marketing lane. Paid advertising fits in revenue. Because at the end of the day, especially, again, I talk specifically B2B business, B2C, it's a little, it's different. You can use some of these models, but it doesn't work as well. And marketing has to generate the interest in the awareness. Sales has to consume that interest in awareness, and they have to speak the same language, and they have to both want to win. And if I'm protecting my ad budget and trying to claim that it worked, and the sales guys are saying those leads sucked, you're still going back to mom or dad, whoever's at the top anyway.
Right.
And someone has to make a decision which counted, because someone's writing a check for more advertising spend and more salespeople. And so what I say is, make it one simple bucket of attribution. We don't have marketing and sales team meetings, because again, under this kind of $15, $10 million umbrella, if you're at eight people, that's enough to cover one person. One person can manage eight people if they're an executive. Like, that isn't, end of life. And that's a pretty healthy department for revenue. Like, you have right. Two full-time marketers and six sales, and like, you're doing fine. And I would say this, like, is the paid advertising working? Who knows better than the salespeople?
Right.
The salespeople should be fighting just as hard for it. And so, like, it's not a referee game, it's a team game. And I think that's the fun I like to have. I love when a salesperson is advocating for paid advertising spend.
Right. Because, at the end of the day, they want, I want to say this with all due affection, because I've been a salesperson for a long time. Salespeople are lazy.
Totally.
But here's the thing is, I think I heard, it was on a Facebook or Instagram reel. I think it was Alex Hormozi, and he talked about some of the best, some of the best people he knows. They're lazy. And he goes, but here's why that's an asset, is because they will find usually the most efficient way to get something done with like to maximize the return for minimal effort.
Yep.
Right. So they should be advocating for no, spend more of this ad money thing, because it's just bringing people to me and I'm closing 10 deals a week instead of 5 deals a week, which means my commission check is a heck of a lot bigger. So automatically I should be a fan, not say, I mean, obviously, but if it doesn't work, then say, well, actually I get the opportunity to help marketing improve it as they're bringing people to my door.
Yep. The people that come in from paid advertising keep saying blank. Can we tweak the message? Because I say this.
Right. Or if it's like marketing, you're creating a promise we can't actually deliver on, which I know is typically what salespeople are more accused of by the service or operations department, of like, you told them we could do what for them? There's no way. Or how fast did you say we could get that out? And it's like, okay, well, I don't know what crack pipe you hit, but we can't do that.
Well, and that's fuel for marketing. And so that's one of the reasons why I kind of advocate for this, like, trim down, you know, function, because if an operations issue has to go through sales and then marketing, like, why not just shorten that cycle of information?
Sure. So you mentioned like sort of an upper limit where this model of a unified department starts to, I don't want to say break apart, but I do think it's when the question of does this still work for us probably needs to be introduced to a quarterly or annual type strategic planning session of, if we're going to make a big change, like, does this still serve us? You can ask that. At what point does a founder need to start thinking about, okay, I need someone else sitting in the CRO type? And obviously I think using chief whatever, below a certain amount is just you trying to have a cooler title. And that's a podcast for a different day,
a whole different one.
And that's where I'm just going to piss off a bunch of people and go down to zero listeners. That's okay. Still got my mom, but when does it make sense for that founder or maybe co-founders to go, you know what? I actually kind of think we need to start moving out of this seat so we can cultivate large relationships, start working more on the business. Maybe it's product service innovation or something like that. And they need to start tiptoeing out, even if whoever they hire likely will not be able to do as good a job as them. Because usually if you have a really strong visionary, it's hard to beat them in the sales game because they are so compelling and they have such intimate knowledge of what it is that they're doing.
In authority. Because if they're saying something happened, there's anybody who can make sure something happens, it's them.
Right. You can trust their word. So if the upper limit is 10 to 15, when does that question of we might need to get somebody else in here, when do you recommend that question start being introduced to evaluate for the right timing?
Just to clarify, are you talking when the CEO is out of sales and marketing, or you're talking someone like me is moving out and saying, this is, we're at the next stage?
When does that founder say, I no longer need to be on the org chart, accountability chart, fulfilling the role of marketer and chief marketer and chief salesperson, that revenue person, we need to bring somebody else in who can start to take over the activity and maybe start building a team if we keep growing at this rate?
Yeah, I would say, you know, if I'm the CEO and this is a conversation I'm having with one of my clients right now, like the roadmap starts to be clear when you start to get to that team of eight. Would be one of the issues, right? Because now you're starting to add layers of management, and that's not going to work necessarily for fractional or for the kind of granularity you're starting to get to. The other thing is when you start to spread the org, right? There's going to be tension, especially in the monthly recurring and high ticket. There's going to be tension brewing on the operations side. They're just, and you're starting to have that understanding of retention as a value driver in the business. And so it's when I feel that the business has got three wings is when I usually bring it in. There's kind of this sales operations, sales, and marketing. At first, it kind of starts, they're kind of one, is what I believe. Yeah. And then you start to split, and now you maybe have a really strong sales leader or a really strong marketing leader who might be able to take the seat, you know, the shared seat. And then you know there's a weakness, so there'll be something that has to backfill here a little bit. Sometimes you can just kind of hold on to that for a little bit longer, but it becomes really obvious when there's tension in three different sections. And that's when it's like, okay, let's split this. Let's have your sales leader who can take care of sales and kind of sales ops and a marketing leader and just bring them all up to the executive level. But again, that's also a revenue question. And I would always ask it in terms of profitability. I would always ask, when can you afford $500,000 in salary? Because if you're talking a real marketing executive at $10 million, you're talking a $200,000 person, and sales leaders are notorious for getting north of $200,000 at that stage. At least that's been my experience. So if you can take $500,000 on in salary, okay, let's have that conversation. It's rare though. This is kind of my point on this whole thing. Is maybe you do two fractionals, but when you have two fractionals, that's the CEO sitting over top having that conversation.
Right, which is sort of plunging them right back down.
It's going right back to where you were. Yep. So
yeah, it's just, except that you got more overhead.
And then I would also look at, you know, how strong is the, you know, the number two. That's the other thing that I sense is when the, go ahead.
I was going to say, so like that integrator, operator, second in command, do you think, in your opinion and experience, are you recommending that people seek out, even if it is a fractional or a part-time second in command, prior to looking at this particular position?
I have one. My business is still fairly small, but what I love about my business and the way I treat my business is exactly the same advice I'd give my clients. I am in that 1 to 10 million service, high ticket offering, monthly recurring revenue. So you're darn right I have an integrator. Number two, it's fractional. I believe in my own model, and I have a fractional chief revenue officer, right? Like, I think that gives me a lot of authority to say, yeah, you better. Because like, not everyone can
sit in your own dog food.
And not everyone can sit in, like, listen, I can do both. I've been an integrator in a past role or operating officer, and it took energy. I didn't gain energy. And that was the big moment for me. And I was feeling that, you know, as this business took off, that I needed to like let go of that and just say, there's people who do this better, who not how. Let's go, like, that's why I built this business. It's what I'm telling the other people. How can I not tell that to myself? So definitely recommend it.
And in case anybody's wondering about the who, not how, phenomenal book from Dan Sullivan. Cannot recommend it highly enough. I actually, prior to that book being released, was already exposed to the impact filter, which he talks about in that book. I have been serving as a second in command for my church. And I had a flaming visionary of a lead pastor, and I got to the place where I was like, you cannot just go announcing things at meetings that we haven't talked about. Also, if you want us to do anything in this church, you need to fill out an impact filter, and then we'll talk about it. Cause that lets me know you actually think that this is a really good idea and we should explore it together.
You are valuing it.
Yeah. And I was like, if you think this is such a great idea, then you can expend the 5 minutes it takes to fill a one-page document out. Until I see that, I'm going to assume it's a great idea, and I may go, hey, you know, I think that's worth writing down or something like that. I was like, but it's not coming into a real meeting and getting explored and getting my time until we do that. And once we did that, it streamlined so many things. So I know that that's a little bit of a tangent, but for any of you, you know, founder, CEOs, early stage, go look up who, not how, and the impact filter and things like that. It's just really practical advice to move by leaps and bounds, and give yourself a break from needing to be the sage of all ages as well. Cause I think a lot of founders think, and I say this as someone who's, you know, started two companies, I got to understand every minute detail of my business and my organization. Otherwise I'm stupid and I'm less than, or, you know, how could I hire somebody else to do it if I don't know how to do it first? And it sort of releases you from that unnecessary burden. But so if somebody's hitting, maybe it sounds like 7 to 8 people, maybe about $1 million in revenue.
In their department, for to replace someone like me, 7 or 8 people in the marketing and sales department, it's when it's time to look at replacing me with someone full time or multiple sales marketing executives. But I would say from the visionary seat or from the CEO seat, it really starts when you are thinking about that first sales hire, that first marketing hire. It's when you are, and sometimes they have one, they have a salesperson and it has been stagnant. I can't tell you how many I come into where it's been 2 million, 2 million, 2 million, or rather 2.1, 2.2, 2.3, and they're not even keeping up with inflation, but we're growing and they want to get past another sales hire, but they can't. And they keep coming into the room saying, where's the marketing strategy? Where's the marketing strategy? Like, that's when you call me. Like, that's the problem I solve.
Gotcha. But in terms of when you are that CEO founder and you're thinking about backing out and hiring those initial hires, it sounds like you're probably starting to encroach on that $1 million revenue mark.
That's when I usually see it for those who have really kind of, they're not overly optimized on the process side and they're not overly in the sales seat. They're starting to think about growing beyond that 1 million mark. There's plenty of owner operator founders who just, you know, they have their number, they're really strong, you know, operations person or two, and they just do great work and they don't want to grow. But if you're like, I keep banging my head against the wall, I'm always in a sales meeting, the team isn't getting my attention. That's when it's
right. You've just been doing it through brute force almost and sheer force of talent and whatever your giftedness is.
Yeah. And you throw some of your operations people in on sales calls every once in a while. you didn't finish the deck in time type stuff like that.
Yeah. We'll pray for them. Now, one of the things that I've witnessed, both in my time in, you know, marketing agency, RevOps agency. I hate that word, but that's okay.
Yeah, I shy away from it, but I'm with you.
Yeah, you almost have to use it now, but, you know, begrudgingly. But what I've seen, and I've had this conversation on multiple episodes about, you know, everybody thinks I need everything all at once, or what is Apple doing? What's Tesla up to? How are they thinking about hiring salespeople? I'm like, shut up. Like, they're nothing like you, dude.
Get your first billion, then let's talk. You hit your first billion, then let's talk.
Right. So I'm an advocate of where are you in a life cycle stage, either as an organization, as a team. Obviously, you know, we got like the 4 or 5 stages of team development. But you also have your own development as an individual leader and contributor. What should people be looking for from an initial salesperson, maybe potential leader, because that $200,000+ executive is not the right fit. Even though they may be like killer at what they do, they may be killer if they're in an enterprise situation with established product market fit and brand recognition. There's some people who can kill it there, and I take nothing away from them, but it takes something different with the initial hires on your way up when you're still scrapping. So what do you advise your clients on when they're thinking about those sort of hires?
I always talk about numbers, and the numbers will tell you when you're ready. The numbers will tell you when you have enough pipeline to sustain and you're predicting your revenue out a little bit further ahead than you've ever been before. And you can say, all right, if I add 15 into my pipe, I know I'm getting 5 out the bottom over the next 3 to 6 months because I know my sales cycle and my duration of each stage. And I can say, it looks healthy. And now I can invest, right? Now I'm investing in that salesperson, not just grabbing a warm body. And so I think that's kind of step one. And then you're right about, you know, that seasoned professional. Like I don't look at them with like untrusting eyes. It's just, I know that it takes a lot in a really good sales org to perform really well. And if you're just expecting that here, when we're in the startup mode, it's probably not going to go well, because you're used to having marketing collateral or a talk track or some sort of funnel that's already working, a very distinct comp plan. How many times I've interviewed a sales guy or gal coming in, who's like, so what's the comp plan? And the visionary and founder was like, it was me yesterday. And so like that, those are red flags for me. If you're not ready to start thinking about those kind of questions, you're going to run into brick walls, and you're going to run into a lot of spent money on people that, you know, sell you well, but don't know, aren't ready to sell for you. And so what I look for is,
I love that. That's worth people rewinding, because I've seen that so many times, and I've witnessed, you know, friends and clients and people who have spent good money on people who genuinely were talented, but they were better at selling them in the interview than they were at being able to adapt to sell for them. I've never heard it that way, but someone should go out and get that tattooed on them.
Now, I feel like I've had it on my forehead because I feel like I say it a lot. So what I would say, you know, in kind of a summary of it is, if you're really trying to find that first sales hire, you're not looking for hungry. You think you want hungry. What you really want is somebody who values relationships. You could always teach someone who cares how to do this work. Now, hunger to me screams sales. And in B2B, high trust, high ticket sales, the hungry salesperson is repulsive to CEOs. But if you can hold a conversation and present care and concern, the behaviors end up looking a lot like hungry. They just have a different intent and a different impact. So a hungry person is a
pick up on.
Oh yeah. You know, let's set our next appointment. It's like, wow, I it sounds like you got a busy week ahead. Can we do this next week? Does that work for you? Next week is better. Like, it's okay to show you care in the sales process. Turns out it goes much better. So I would focus on someone in relation who cares about the relationship. So it's not, you know, how good they are at breaking down doors. It's how good they are at, you know, smiling and waving and doing that extra piece. Did they send you the email after the interview saying, you know what, I genuinely appreciate what you're doing here? And there's a big difference between the rote one that's what you're supposed to do and the one that feels like they captured a tangible piece of your story and really cared about it.
Yeah. I heard someone, and I'm sure it's in a book or something like that, and I apologize to whoever I'm stealing this from. Thank you, Austin Kleon. I am stealing like an artist. But it's a great book. But the idea of early on, you want to hire missionaries, and later on, you can hire mercenaries.
Ooh, I like that. I might steal that one. That's worth rewinding.
There you go. That's another tattoo. But early on, I mean, it really is about, we're rallying around, we're doing a thing, we're coming together, we small band of brothers sort of thing, sisters. But like, we're all coming around this concept, this idea, and we're taking on the giants of our industry or our niche, and there's a better way, and we're selling because we're scrappy and we're nimble and we can pivot and we can iterate and we can customize, and we don't have a billion customers, so we can treat you like you're our only, like you can do that. And there are people who are very, very good at that.
Are usually close. They're personal relations and connections. And, you know, as much as the CEO wants that wolf, the mercenary, the value is really when they take care of those personal relationships and increase the value of them versus use them.
Yes, because for most entrepreneurs that make it past the, you know, all of the failure thresholds of, you know, the first 18 months and then 5 years, or, you know, getting to past $1 million, you know, which is, I know it seems small compared to all these other multi-million and billion dollars. Like, that's no small feat. Like, it's hard. It's a grind. It's going to cost you something to get there. But most of the time I've seen a lot of these CEOs and these founders, they're so daggum good at sitting and being with that person, casting vision, really hearing them, maintaining, like they are beloved by their clients.
Yep.
Because they bought into the relationship, not the transaction, and they're able to hold on to that. And I do think that's why so many of those CEOs and those founders feel, I would not even say trepidation. Sometimes it's real fear that if I put somebody else in position to develop these relationships, they're either not going to do it because they don't care about that. They care about the paycheck I'm going to give them on the commission, which is why you should have some sort of incentive for longevity of time with them, with the company. But they may also just like, I'm just kind of in it. I want to, what do you need? Okay, cool. Can we do it? Great. Let's go on. But it wasn't like, you don't know where their kids, you know, like go to school and when they're, you know, and what sport they really care about. Like, but these founders, like, it is remarkable how much they learn and know and care. And for the most part, it's not 100%, but for the most part, it's sincere.
Mm-hmm. Well, they know
you can't fake that.
Food on the table. It's putting food in their team's mouths. Like they, like you cannot fake that. And so to your point, you said it again. It's the, like, if you think you have a mercenary who's waiting for to be fed and you don't, and they're asking about, you know, how aggressive is the comp plan? Like, they're probably not going to take your loved ones, the people in your tight circle, and take really good care of them. So,
yeah. And they may be great once you're at 15, 20 million. You may, yeah.
Different world.
And when you're, yeah. And this is why I advocate for, it's not about like right people, wrong people. I know we have right people, right seats. Blah, blah, blah. I do advocate for that, but it's got to be about the fit of the person for the moment, not just the organization, but for the organization at this time. Because what we need now is different than what we're going to need later. We know that intuitively with children, right? Like, I'm not letting my 10-year-old drive a car, and I'm not holding them accountable for, you know, putting food on the table or doing, you know, some of the bigger chores of lifting something heavy or whatever it is. But I've made it appropriate to them. And we'll know that as parents, at least if you're, you know, a better than decent parent, you know that. But we forget about that. We get in the business world and suddenly our business needs something. It's no different than the development of a child, to be honest with you.
Yep. I think that's really well said.
What is the first step somebody should be taking in the next 24 hours, little to no money, if they say, you know what, I think I'm ready to really make this a singular department or to start backing out of being, I want one less hat in being the chief everything officer. And maybe it's time to start looking at that next salesperson or marketing person who can be a who, instead of me knowing how. What would you tell them?
I would say a very practical next step. And I would, you know, write down a couple of different, you know, this exercise I'll do, for four quadrants, right? Write your competition, write marketing, sales, and then your vision. And just give yourself a simple score. How's your competition doing in marketing and sales? 1 to 10, 10 being best. How you feel about your sales today? 1 to 10, 10 being your best. Marketing. And then how are you on track, off track toward your vision? And I bring the competition in because if you, you know, I'm kind of spoiling this, but it will tell you what to do with this information so you can really turn it into action, is if you are really, you know, excited it'll end up being annoyed by your competition, you feel like they're doing a better job than you, you need to look at your whole picture. You need to look at your revenue and marketing sales strategy. Because if you have more confidence that your competitor is going to win than yourself, you need to look at your leader team, whoever is in charge of that today. And that may be you. Like, you may need to hold that mirror up. And then usually those answers are inverts of each other. You're usually going, you know, 10 and 5. And then vision is the other way, right? It's kind of the opposite quadrant here. You might not be worried about your competition. You might be feeling good about your marketing and sales, but you're stuck. And you've known that for a long while. And that's what I found most of these leaders are, who are thinking about, you know, I keep trying marketing tactics and I've failed at hiring these sales guys. Like, why?
Yeah.
You might think you have good people, or you might think you have a strategy, but if you're not getting to your vision, then you probably don't.
Well, that's great insight. Take a snip of that, rewind it, play it back until it shows up like a tattoo. Kyle, thank you so much for sharing your wisdom. If people wanted more of it, if they wanted to learn more about who you are, what you're doing, how you can help them, where would you send them?
I would send them to the website for sure. readyforthenextlevel.com. Kind of funny, nailed that branding. So ready for the next level. Or hit me on LinkedIn. And then, you know, I'll be talking about the book soon, and giving away some advanced copies of it potentially in first chapter.
Excellent. All right. We'll make sure to link those up in the show notes. So if anybody wants to go and check that out. Kyle, again, thank you so much. Really, really helpful. And for you out there listening somewhere in podcast land, which should be a country, if this was helpful to you, please like, subscribe, rate, review, give me feedback. I always want to make the show better. I make this show for you. I enjoy it, but it's for your benefit. And if you're someone who's really other centered and you want to help somebody else, sharing this out, liking it, getting it more visibility is a cheap, fast, easy way to help somebody else find this show or find this particular episode, so that they can get the help that maybe they need to go to their next level.
Oh.
See how I did that? Look, it's just the circle is now complete.
Say, as a guest, like, you ask really thoughtful questions, and I appreciate the challenge in it. So hopefully that created real good value. And
thank you. Well, until next time, change the way you think, you'll change the way you lead. We'll see you.